Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Document Management for Accountants to Go, a monthly podcast program with executive editor Darren Root and the country's foremost document management consultant, John Higgins. These thought leaders discuss all aspects of document management with a laser focus on the special needs of the practicing accountant.
Hi, this is Darren Root for Intersection Live, and you are listening to Episode 12 of Document Management for Accountants to Go. I'd like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for sponsoring our podcast. I'm here with regular host John Higgins today. John is a principal with CPA Crossings out in Metro Detroit. Many of you may know John. John's a national expert on all things digital and more specifically document management for accountants. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Darren.
Great to be with you today. I know this is our first one, so I'm sure it'll be exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I look forward to working with you, and I'd like to congratulate you on your new position as editor of CPA Technology Advisor.
Sure, well, great.
Thanks. Busy.
I really appreciate that. Today we're going to be talking about tax season tips and techniques for unlocking the power of Adobe Acrobat to annotate, secure, and manage your PDF files. And as you and I've talked, John, you know, I run a small accounting firm in Bloomington, Indiana. So Adobe is one of these products that we certainly use, but I definitely don't think I use it to its full power. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this myself.
Great.
So kind of lay the groundwork. What do we need to be thinking about here?
Well, I guess the first point I'd like to start out by talking about, you know, for those who have been following along with the DMA to Go podcast, you know, we've talked primarily about document management solutions and specific functionality and specific vendor solutions and so forth. And I thought that, you know, since most of the listeners are probably knee-deep into tax season, this is a good time to talk about a tool that is integral to working in a paperless environment, which is Adobe. And, you know, what we find in our work at CPA Crossings, we're constantly helping accounting and tax professionals with all things going paperless. And so every year it becomes more and more apparent the increasing role that Adobe Acrobat is playing in firms. As far as, I would like to say, when you're going paperless, that also means you're going pencil-less, and so Adobe really becomes that electronic pencil that you need to mark up and work with your electronic documents.
Sure.
You know, so it's really getting to be, in terms of kind of the food chain of software applications that people are working with in an accounting office, you know, of course, Excel is at or near the top of the list, and QuickBooks, of course, and all the tax software. But I think that Adobe has really kind of moved up that food chain quite a bit. I put it above Microsoft Word because, you know, we're doing more of our letters and correspondence through email, so that means less work in Word. And on the other side, Adobe is just being used more and more for working with these electronic documents.
I definitely find that true for us. I mean, everything that I never find myself going back to a fax machine anymore. So everything that goes out, I either print in Adobe and send it off, or I scan it in Adobe and send it off. Is that what you're finding out there?
Yeah, well, that's a great to hear that you're doing that, Darren. We encourage practitioners to do that. I mean, traditionally, it's been more a case where we've been sending out, like, native files in Excel format or in Word format. And in our opinion, from a security and protection of the confidentiality, converting it to a static PDF document format and then securing it, and we'll talk a little bit about the security features of Acrobat, that we think is a very prudent way to go, to just kind of give you a little bit more control over what you're sending out to clients and third parties.
It seems like Adobe or Acrobat in particular is one of those programs, though, that we kind of came through, you know, just the reader, Acrobat reader position first. Then we realized that we could actually create some Adobe documents, but it feels like we kind of stopped our learning there. We didn't really engulf ourselves in the program and figure out all of its capabilities, maybe like we have in Excel or a Word.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also a good lead into the next area I wanted to get into a little bit, is just talk briefly about the Adobe product line, because I think there's a little bit of confusion out there. Adobe's been doing a pretty good job from a marketing perspective of continually upgrading their software at a pretty fast pace. You know, some might argue it's a little bit too fast right now. But so let me spend a couple minutes maybe to lay out the framework of what the different alternatives are for the Adobe product line. And, you know, some of you may be driving your car while we're listening to this podcast, so obviously you can go back and review it again if you want to get some of the specifics. But as you mentioned, Darren, Reader is really kind of where everybody cut their teeth working with PDF files. Adobe Corporation did a great job of establishing the PDF format as a standard file format and then developing this free software called Reader that, you know, would allow you to exchange files in PDF format and not have to worry about whether the recipient had the appropriate software, because you would just send them a link to the Reader and they get it for free. And that's kind of where it all began. And from that, we now have, we've evolved all the way up to version 9 of the Adobe Acrobat software. And I think, I'm not sure when the first version of Adobe came out, but I think it was in the early 90s, if I remember correctly.
And, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that's about the time frame. So it's been evolving. And just in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, we've gone from version 6 to 7 to 8 to 9. So it seems like we're spending more money in terms of individual product upgrades with Adobe than we are with the Microsoft products, because obviously Microsoft's upgrade cycle has been stretched out a little bit longer time frame. But there's really, with version 9, and I do encourage folks that are doing a lot with PDFs to stay current. We've seen, you know, back with version 5 and 6, it was pretty unstable in a lot of respects. And 7, 8, and 9 have continually or successively gotten to be not only more feature-packed, but more importantly, just more stable solutions. So I think it's worth the investment to stay current with it.
You know, John, I have a technical question, I guess. Hopefully you can help me with on that. As I, you know, I use Vista on my desktop.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noticed that I've had a problem with in installing, at least I know in version 8, and I'm on version 9 now, but... And maybe I'm just looking at it wrong, but it seems like I've had trouble installing the print, you know, the Adobe print driver, the Acrobat print driver.
Uh-huh.
But then it also seems like it's built more into Excel and Word and Outlook, where you can, it's more of an add-in. Am I looking at that wrong?
Not really. There's a couple of things. When you install, well, three things, I guess. I'm not sure what the issue might be that you're having with the print driver in Vista, because I started using Vista first of the year. I let my partner, Brian Smith, who you know, Darren, I let him do it a year ago because he's the more technical one of the two of us in our partnership. So I let him go a year ahead of me. And so I've used Vista since January, and I do a lot in Adobe. Haven't had any particular problems with the print driver. Now,
okay, so that's something I need to troubleshoot then, right?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
You say with version 9 you're doing that, or version 8?
Well, I know I experienced the problem probably all the way back in version 6 that I didn't want to install that driver. And I don't want this to be a technical issue, but I thought, well, maybe Adobe changed something where it really doesn't install the print driver any longer, but actually adds these plugins.
No, it does. It does install the print driver, and I'm using version 9 with Vista, and I haven't had any issues with that.
Okay.
Now, in terms of the Office applications, a couple things. When you install Acrobat, it does install an add-in to Office, so you get a new tab. If you're specifically using Office 2007, it'll be another tab on the ribbon, and that'll have with it the ability to go in and define specific conversion settings for bringing documents from Excel and Word over into and Outlook, in fact, over into a PDF format. An example would be if you had like a three worksheet workbook in Excel, you have the ability to tell it to convert all three worksheets to PDF, or you can pick and choose the worksheets, which can be really nice if you have like an elaborate supporting schedule work paper that you set up in Excel, and maybe some of the sheets you want in PDF and some you don't. You can pick and choose, and when it creates the PDF file, in that example, if you brought over, let's say, three spreadsheets, it'll automatically bookmark the location where each of the three spreadsheets begins in the PDF file. S- So they've done some pretty nice things there to really enhance the integration with Office back to a PDF format. So that's the issue with the integration with Office. Now the other point that has not been really clearly or actively marketed, I guess, in Office 2007, Microsoft has embedded the ability to save files in a PDF format. And was doing some research on it, and best I can tell and determine is that you don't even need to have Adobe on your system. If you have Office 2007, you still have the ability to save those files directly into a PDF format. So that's kind of a nice little bonus that, apparently Microsoft's seen as well the opportunities to promote that PDF format.
So, John, what's the value of saving? Okay, so you have this Excel file that you certainly are going to save probably as an Excel file, as opposed to just printing a document in PDF onto your server or wherever. What's the value in saving as a PDF? Is that different?
Well, if I understand your question correctly, I mean, however you get it into the PDF format, the end result is you are going to have the file in that PDF format. Then you can use a tool like Adobe Acrobat, which, by the way, is not the only tool you can use to work with PDF files. Some people are aware of that, but many are not. It's kind of like the Kleenex of the PDF industry. Acrobat is kind of the standard, and so I'm a big believer in standards. You know, you talk about having to bring in new staff and train them. I mean, as time goes on, people are going to just know how to use Adobe Acrobat. But having said that, there are many third-party products that you can use to create your own PDFs and so forth. But to your original question, so what's the advantage of that? Well, when you get it in the PDF format, then you have what we would refer to as a static document, a static copy of that document. And with that, you can use all the functionality of a tool like Adobe Acrobat to annotate it, just like you would a paperwork paper with pencils or colored pencils, as some firms like to do. You can annotate it. You can secure it. We think that's a very important aspect. You can, and some people are under the misconception that just because it's in PDF doesn't mean the contents can be changed. When we do our webinars on Adobe, I always like to show an example of where I can get a financial statement, just show people on the screen how I can change the numbers, even though it's in a PDF format. What you have to do is you have to take it to the next level and apply the security functionality that's in Adobe Acrobat, and then you can limit people's ability to make any changes to it. You can limit their ability to print the document. Let's say, for example, you want to send a client a draft of a tax return, but you didn't want them to actually have the ability to take that and print it. You could secure it to the point where they can open it on their screen and view it, but that's all they can do with it. They can't print it. They may get a little frustrated, but you say, hey, it's a draft. I have to control it, the distribution of it. Or you can also limit their ability to copy pages out of a file into another PDF file. So, you know, without getting into all the details of security, the point is when you put it in a PDF format, you have a great deal of capability to really secure that so that as you distribute it, you can take comfort in knowing that it's, you know, there's limited capabilities that someone's going to be able to take that information and do other things with it other than what it's intended for.
So it sounds to me like, I guess I'm thinking of the answer to my question would be that if I don't have Adobe Acrobat, the value is in Excel, if I can save as a PDF not having Adobe Acrobat, then I could pull it up. And is that kind of what you're saying? That's where the value would be?
Well, you can.
Does that make sense?
You could save it, let's say if you have Office 2007, you could save it as a PDF format. And then, of course, if you just have the free Adobe Reader, you could view it as a PDF. But if you're going to want to, you know, really take control of it and manage it as a PDF file, you're going to need to have Acrobat
okay.
a tool, equivalent tool. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. And so if somebody doesn't have full version of Acrobat, they could save as a PDF in Excel or Word, and that would definitely be a benefit for them.
Yes. I think my personal opinion is that as accountant and tax professionals, though, you got to look at Acrobat as becoming a standard tool in the toolbox. It's right up there, like I say, with Word, and it's not quite as important perhaps as Excel. I wouldn't make that argument, but I don't know how firms, people working in firms, can really get by without it much longer, because it is becoming the de facto tool for really managing all these PDF files that are, you know, as document management systems continue to proliferate, it just is more and more PDF files are being moved through the marketplace, and Acrobat is the number one tool out there to annotate them and secure them and so forth.
I couldn't agree with you more, John. I want to hit on one point that you made a minute ago, and that's about upgrading.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a little confusing. I mean, how many copies do we need? How do we need to be buying Acrobat, I guess, is my question. How do we need to be buying it, and how do we need to be upgrading it?
Okay. Well, there's with the version 9, prior to version 9, they basically had two editions of Acrobat, standard and professional. And now with version 9, they've gone to a third level, so they have standard, pro, and pro extended. For the vast majority of people working in an accounting and tax firm, standard is the product you want and need. And I actually went out and did some little updates checking the pricing today. The street price for a standard Acrobat today is around $265 to $285 bucks. If you're not upgrading. If you're upgrading from a previous version, it's about $85. So it's not that expensive if you already have Acrobat. And the standard version is what allows you to create the PDFs. I think the most important piece it gives you is that print driver you were referring to earlier, Darren, because I think that accounting and tax professionals should really focus more on getting their clients to generate output in PDF format as opposed to giving them paper. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about scanners and scanning processes and functionality, but you can leapfrog over all that if you just educate and train your clients how to provide that information to you electronically. It's a lot easier to do that with business clients than it is individuals for the most part, but it's a trend that you should be, in my opinion, working towards. So then we have the other two versions, which are Pro and Pro Extended. And the biggest difference there, frankly, is in the Pro version is the ability to create dynamic forms. And I would say, based on my experience, that with the Adobe Forms capability, you can take any form in your office, and I could say it confidently without seeing the forms, and reproduce them in Adobe Professional and do a better job because, you know, without getting into a lot of details, you can validate the data entry. So if you have, like, a field to enter the state, you can have a drop-down list of valid states, so you don't have to worry about them picking the wrong combination of letters. So if you think about your routing sheets, your checklist, for firms that are still doing paper timesheets or expense reports, any of those forms that are working their way through your office in a paper document, you can convert those to electronic forms and have a much higher quality of information in those forms. And to create the forms, you need the professional version. However, to use the forms, you can even create a form. Let's say, Darren, I could create a routing sheet form, and I could send that to you electronically, and if all you have is Adobe Reader, my form will enable your Adobe Reader software to actually be able to fill in the form electronically. So it's the point there is not everybody needs professional just because you're going to create forms. Only the people who are going to actually design and build the forms need that. So we usually recommend in an accounting office maybe one or two people, depending on the size of the firm, obviously.
Yeah, we use we have the ability to create forms and a couple of our we have version 9 pro version on a couple, and that is tremendously, our routing sheet, for instance, is tremendously helpful for our tax returns, which, you know, is relevant for right now. So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Good. So you're obviously having that experience, so that's good to hear.
And then the Pro Extended, does that do anything for us?
And just to give you a sense of the pricing, the street price on that is like $650 bucks. So you're going from $265 for standard up to $650 for the Pro Extended. And to me, the Pro Extended is really if you're going to be doing a lot of creative work with your PDF files. It's kind of interesting. If you look at the entire suite of Adobe products, they probably have, I don't know, maybe a dozen or more different products. But a lot of them had their roots in the creative world and the engineering world. You know, working with design documents, CAD/CAM, and so forth on one hand, and then also in the creative world for actually developing, printing material like brochures and things like that. So, but when you get to the Acrobat line, that's the area that's had the most impact in the business community for business information users. And what you see when you get to Pro Extended is the additional functionality is more graphical oriented. The ability to embed videos, the ability to integrate and actually embed videos back into Microsoft Word and PowerPoint. It includes what they call Adobe Presenter, which I guess the best way to describe that is I would say it's Adobe's answer to PowerPoint. So
okay.
I don't think it's really that necessary. I haven't found a real need for it. I'm a PowerPoint junkie, and I haven't used, you know, probably more than 30% of its capabilities. So I don't see the additional value for Pro Extended at this point.
So really what we're saying here is once you have your first copy of Standard, it's $85 a year or every $85 an upgrade every time you want to upgrade.
Yes, that's what the current pricing is. In fact, one of the things they do have, I just noticed that when I was doing the review of the pricing, is there's a two-year maintenance package you can get, which is, I think, right around $100 also, once you do upgrade, or whether you buy it or upgrade it, but then you can kind of protect yourself for the next 2 years at about $100. And so that seemed pretty good because, you know, it looks like it's about every 18 months they're coming out with a new release of Adobe, the way it's been the last few years.
Okay. All right. That's great. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about, you know, the ability to annotate and things like that we have.
Yeah. You know, this is an area where, you know, some firms are really taking advantage of this. Others aren't all that aware of the capabilities. But when you go into Adobe and on the command menu, there's a command dedicated to comments or commenting. And when you get in there, you start to get a sense of just all the functionality that's there. The probably the most important feature of annotation is the ability to put in what Adobe refers to as sticky notes. And so you can just literally drop down, it's kind of like comments in Word, I guess, as an analogy, where you just drop down a little symbol wherever you want to put a note about some information in that PDF file. And then behind the scenes, when you open that note, it keeps track of who the author is, the date and time that it was created. You can have a title for the subject. You can track the status. And they have some default status settings. You can say the note is accepted or it's been canceled or it's rejected. They have what's called a migration status where you can identify it as being confirmed or unconfirmed. And then within the notes, so if I let's say, Darren, that I prepared a tax return and I sent it to you to review it, you're going to go in there to Adobe because you're going to review it off the PDF copy, and you'll just, you know, make your review notes right in these little sticky notes. As you're looking through the tax return and the supporting documents, you'll just click on the note and you'll type in whatever the question is. You know, did we verify the K-1s are all in? Did we put this subtotal to double check it? And you can, by the way, you can type those in, or you can talk them in. If you have a microphone, if you don't like typing, you can just put them in as an embedded audio comment. And then you would send the file back to me as the preparer, and I got to clear those review notes. So I would just go and I would click through and open up your review notes, and then I could reply to them. And what the system will do is it'll keep the whole thread in there. So inside your initial comment, it'll have my reply comment, again, stamped with date and time and author and so forth. And this could go back and forth. We could end up in the process, which is the way it used to be for me when I did tax returns, with a thread of maybe 6 or 7 messages for the same issue going back and forth. And Adobe will keep that entire audit trail. And then there's some nice functionality in the what's called the comments panel, where you can go in and look at all your annotations on a document and say, I just want to see the review notes from Darren, and I just want to see the review notes from Darren that have been accepted, or I just want to see the review notes from Darren that have been rejected. And so you can really, in a way I call it the poor man's review note tracking tool, because there are some very good automated work programs, work paper programs like CCH Engagement and Engagement CS from Thompson and Caseware. I mean, those are much better solutions, don't get me wrong, but if you want to keep it simple and just focusing it in this example on 1040 work, then it can be a viable way to, really make and embed your review notes directly in the document. And you have the ability to control when you print the document, whether or not you want the review notes to be included in that printing. When you distribute it out to somebody, you can use security to limit someone's ability to see the notes as well. So a lot of capability there just in the commenting piece of it alone. That to me can make it worth the price of the software all by itself.
Well, if you're a small firm out there not doing audits, but doing a lot of 1040s or a little bit of corporate work, and you're not using an engagement product from CCH or from Thompson or from somebody else, this is a perfect tool for doing your notes on 1040s. Which brings up kind of an interesting point. We use a digital file cabinet, you know, to scan documents, client documents into.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's important to make sure, you know, and there is, a lot of times you have the ability to scan those in different formats. But in order to have this capability, you need to make sure we're scanning those in as a PDF, right?
Yes, although I should double-check this, but I believe you can even take a TIFF file, which is another popular format, a TIFF,
yeah,
and bring that into into an Acrobat. You can convert it.
Okay.
Yeah, so then once you do that, you have the ability then to use all the functionality that Acrobat brings to the table. Yeah.
So annotating for tax review, which is really relevant right now, is a major benefit that I see. Other thoughts as it relates to that?
Yeah, and if you want to build on it for in terms of, you know, saying we want to kind of keep our work paper model built around the Acrobat and the PDF file, well, then you also have the ability to attach and link to other files. So you can truly build a little work paper binder, and some of this functionality has improved even more so with version 9. But you can, for example, I can create a bookmark that says, for this particular bookmark, instead of linking to a specific page in the document, link to the supporting Excel spreadsheet. So when I click on the bookmark, it'll go out and open up Excel and launch that spreadsheet. Or I could create a bookmark to link to the IRS website to show me one of their publications that, you know, discusses a particular form. And I could also put like a little push pin link anywhere within the document so I can reference directly at that spot in the PDF a direct link, again, to another file. It could be another PDF file, or it could be another file of another type, a QuickBooks file, Excel file, Word file. So you can, if you use your imagination a bit, you could have a central PDF file with maybe the finished copy of the tax return, and then you could have all the supporting PDF documents that were used to create that tax return all in the same file, and then you could have links out to these other files that are in different applications like Excel, Word, maybe some Outlook email messages that were pertinent to that tax return. Now, there are some issues. I don't want to make it sound as simple as I may be doing here, because you do have to then make sure you understand how the management of those file links works if you start moving that file around the office. But if you do everything on a central work group server, then, you know, it'll work actually quite well.
Sure. Sure. Good idea. You know, one of the things that we are doing this tax season in our firm is, you know, we've always scanned in the back end, which I know is not necessarily the most ideal, but we're scanning on the front end, sending a file really to Copanion, and converting that into PDFs, and that's been a tremendous help so far. Annotating these PDFs, I think, is a great idea. It really allows that 1040 process, as far as the paper goes, to be completely paperless, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the more you can master the annotation capabilities and so forth in Adobe, the easier it'll be to move that from a back-end scanning process to either what we'd consider a midpoint scanning prior to review, or actually doing the whole tax return in a paperless workflow. Because that is the number one rub spot when firms try to go paperless, and a lot of firms get, you know, pretty aggressive on the front end, not really realizing what they're getting into. But when you scan on the front end, if your mission or objective is to say, okay, we're going to be completely paperless through the tax preparation process, well, you better have spent the time to train people on your policies and procedures for using tools like Adobe and really understanding how to actually annotate that file as it moves through the office, as well as using something like the Adobe Forms feature to create your forms in a paperless model. Otherwise, inevitably what happens in firms is they start out, you know, on a very positive note, and then in the heat of tax season, they switch back to where it becomes, you know, either partially or almost completely a paperless process till they get to the back end again. So
I guess I kind of misspoke. We were at the midpoint. When you said midpoint, that's really where we were. We were, you know, the paperwork would come in. A preparer would take that. They would, I had a couple preparers that would go ahead and scan immediately and prepare from the scans, and a couple of others that wanted to prepare from the paper and then scan, but then we reviewed everything on screen. But we've moved that to the very front now where everything's coming in as a scan. And so I see this annotation capability as being paramount in making that process even that much more efficient and effective.
Yeah, it sounds like you're on a good track there. And, definitely that's the case. And another area which we didn't talk about yet is part of the annotation of the stamps. Adobe comes with a nice set of electronic stamps. Some of them are referred to as dynamic stamps. So, for example, they have a stamp that's marked as reviewed, and then it'll also have in there the date and time and the author. So you could be looking at my tax return, and if your policy is, well, we want the reviewer to make sure he or she has looked at every page of that PDF, you can just review the page, drop the stamp down, go to the next page, drop the stamp down, and then there's a, you know, audit trail of the fact that you've reviewed every page. And there are some third-party products out there because a lot of accounting and tax firms are looking for some tick marks that are maybe a little more relevant to the kinds of tick marks they're used to putting on in paper. A couple examples, just to name a few, the CCH has their PD Flyers software, which actually is a part of their ProFX scan, which we'll talk about that in previous DMA to go podcast. We'll probably talk about it more down the road, but it's a tool to help the scanning process for 1040 documents. In any event, there's a PD flyer that has some custom tick marks specifically for accounting and tax applications.
Is that sold separately, John?
I don't know if they've bundled that yet. My understanding is you have to buy that, or you can only buy that when you purchase the ProFX scan.
Okay.
Unless they've changed. I don't know if this year if they made a change to that, but that's my understanding. You've got to get ProFX scan to get the PD flyer.
All right.
But I would say if anybody's interested, you should go to the CCH website and just check that for sure.
Sure.
Then you have Act First. They make a document management system for accounting and tax professionals, and they have Tick, Tie, and Calculate, which is their custom tick mark tool, and they're really promoting that very heavily. I think in many cases they might even be giving one license away free just by, you know, making connection with them and giving them a chance to talk about their system.
I've used that. That's a nice little product.
Yeah, I've heard good things, and you know, I had a little look at it. It does look pretty good. And we've also created some custom tick marks here at CPA Crossings with some of the firms we've worked for. They've asked us to help them design some. And actually, it's a pretty relatively easy process. You just need some graphics software to create the symbols and have a little bit of knowledge about how Adobe organizes the storage of the tick mark files. But you can create your own tick marks as well. So that's if you have some specific symbols you're looking to get there, it's definitely a possibility with Adobe.
Okay. Another thing we probably ought to talk about before we run out of time is just security. You know,
yeah.
I know that a lot of, you know, us included in the past, you know, you're just letting PDFs fly all over the place. You know, send a copy of a tax return, send a copy of a financial statement. Now we've moved, you know, more to a portal environment, and that's worked well for us. But I know, you know, although people are adopting, firms are adopting portals, but maybe not at the pace that, you know, I'd like to see them adopting them. I ran across a product called ShareFile recently, which is the ability to exchange documents more in a really inexpensive sort of portal where you send an email and it has a link back to a file that you have to have authentication to get to. So tell me a little bit about security and Adobe and what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, it's you make a good point that a lot of people are just sending these out without securing them. And the example I gave before, just when you show someone how they can actually change the content of a PDF that's unsecured, then it gets their attention a little bit more. I think it was in version 8 when they first introduced security policies, and with the security policies feature, what's real nice there is you can set up like different levels of security, and you don't want to make it overly complicated because then it just people it doesn't work. But you could have, for example, like two security policies, low security and high security, for example. And so what happens, you go in and you define, okay, for a high security policy, these are the security features we want to enable. No printing, perhaps, no copying, no extracting of pages, encryption of the file as we send it via email. And so you could put, you know, employ the maximum security settings of Adobe and name that in a policy called high security. And then you could have a low security which says, you know, all we really want is a password to open the file. So if we inadvertently email it to the wrong person, which I think we've all done that, I know I've done it my share of times, when they do receive that email, when the wrong person receives the email with the PDF attached, well, at least they won't have the password to open it up. So as a minimum level of security, if you've got sensitive data, then you should put a password on it. And so maybe that's just all you need for your low security policy. So then what happens, you know, as part of your just policies in your firm, whenever somebody sends out a PDF or creates a PDF, they either should apply the high security policy or the low security policy. And everybody within the firm, you know, should have a way of knowing, well, if it's low security, what the password is. And the password could be either a constant, although it's, you know, the security professional will tell you that's no good. You always have to balance simplicity with you know, the level of security.
But sure.
You could set up a model that says, well, okay, our security policy in Darren's firm is that we're going to always use the client's ID from the practice management system and maybe the, some other number that would be consistent with the firm, like the zip code or something. That way everybody in the firm would know, okay, if I'm on this client's file, this is going to be the password. It's going to be their client ID plus the firm's zip code. Probably get a little more detail there than we need to for this discussion. But if you set up those policies, then it becomes real easy. All you got to do is apply the policies. You don't have to go in each time and establish what the specific security parameters are. There's also, and I get a little confused which edition this is in, but it's in the. You have to have the Pro edition in version 8 and version 9. I believe those are the two levels you got to be at to get what we call redaction tools. And redaction would allow you to go to a tax return and say, okay, this is the Social Security number. I want to just basically black it out. And so you can put a black block over it so no one would be able to see that if you distribute the tax return as a PDF. Even though they could view the tax return, they wouldn't be able to see specifically the Social Security number as an example. So that's kind of a nice little feature.
Am I right, John, saying in some states are requiring, maybe Massachusetts just passed a law, as it relates to sending out personal information like that with Social Security numbers on it, they have to be redacted maybe?
That could be very, very much the case, Darren. I know that California has a rule about emailing documents with Social Security number, so Massachusetts may very well have that. That's one of the toughest challenges I think that accountants and tax professionals face these days, just knowing what are my legal requirements and regulations I've got to follow. So the best you can do, I think, is just be, you know, ahead of the game and do the things that are prudent like that anyhow. But, I think we're going to see more of that. You know, this whole, as more and more information moves electronically, there's going to be more and more regulations, I believe, to make sure that it truly is secure. And
as a managing partner, I think the thing I take from this discussion we've just had is how important Adobe Acrobat could be to our firm and is to our firm, but also that we need to have some training sessions, you know, internally, whether we bring somebody from outside in to teach us how to use Adobe fully and to set up policies and best practices for not only using Acrobat but also emailing and all the other components that go along with that, review notes and everything else. Because this is not just something right out of the box that maybe is intuitive.
Right. And it's one of those examples where a little bit of training will pay some pretty big dividends.
Yeah, I think so, too. Any ideas? Where do you go to get that?
Well, if I can put in a shameless plug, that's one of the things we specialize in at CPA Crossings. We do. We have a whole schedule of webinars we offer on our website. We have an Adobe Level 1 and 2, which are, for beginners and intermediate users, and then we have a couple webinars specifically on creating forms. You can also go to the Adobe website. They have some pre-recorded training that's, I believe, free of charge, but they also have links to many different third-party providers. They may not be as CPA-centric or accounting-centric, but they, you know, definitely, you know, can show you the ins and outs of different functionality within Adobe.
Well, so that you don't have to put the shameless plug in, I want to know more about what you guys do then. I mean, so as a firm, we could sign up with CPA Crossings and do a webinar and put some of my staff through that training?
Absolutely, yeah. If you go to our website, we have a CPE center, and so we have public classes that, you know, you'd be on a webinar with people from other firms. And then we also do private in-house firms, because a lot of times firms will say, well, you know, we're at this level, so could you kind of combine material from level one and two and just put it into a, you know, more of a customized session? We're always happy to do that, too.
Perfect. So if somebody wants to know more about that, they can go to cpacrossings.com?
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, John, we ran probably just a little bit over the time that we thought we would today. So any closing thoughts that you have?
No, well, I just want to wish everybody a happy tax season, and hopefully the weather will warm up for those of us living in the northern part of the country. And April 15th or 16th will be here before we know it.
Boy, it's moving along fast. So far, so good in our tax season. Seems like people have been in a little bit earlier. But, you know, the more paperless, the more digital we become, the easier it seems to be on us. So I'm encouraging all of our listeners to pursue that. Our next recording is going to be on April 3rd at 9 a.m. So if somebody wants to go to TalkShoe.com and listen in there, we would love to have you. And I want to thank you, John, today for your time and insights, and thank ADP as being our corporate sponsor. So this is we'll sign off for today. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Dan.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.